Snipe. Severus Snipe.
Dumbledore.
Snipe.
Ron.
Snipe.
Ron.
Severus
Ron
Snipe.
Weasley.
Dumbledore. Snipe.
Ron.
Snipe.
Ron.
Severus
Ron
Snipe.
Dumbledore.
Snipe.
Hello and welcome to the
Severus
Novel Ideas
Snipe.
Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast. A podcast with two siblings who love books.
I love books so much that I read my textbooks when I'm lying in bed on the weekends.
I like books so much that, well, actually, I don't want to steal Jessica's joke.
Oh, I love books so much that I made one into a Horcrux.
What's a Horcrux?
No one knows.
What? How's that spelled? It sounds gross. You're a Horcrux.
Hey, watch it.
You filthy Horcrux.
Let's say the next time I find someone, like, kissing somebody else. You're a Horcrux. Yeah, so one of our discoveries is that book six is made of spoilers.
Yeah, so basically the entire series is going to be spoiled. I don't know why you'd be listening to this episode if you didn't already know what happens in the book.
If you're like, oh, look, they recorded the first six Harry Potter books. I'm just going to listen to episode six.
Just jump right in and see what's going on. This book also contains one of the most infamous spoilers in recent memory.
Yeah.
The internet was exploding over
Oh my lord. It was crazy.
And this was in the relatively early days of the internet, even.
Not really.
Well, early in
it's
terms...
like 2007.
Yeah, but like the modern concept of the internet, like it changes every 2 years.
I guess so, yeah.
Like social media was just blowing up, really.
Yeah. See, I guess if you guys don't know, Snape kills Dumbledore.
Oh my god, really? I didn't finish the book.
No, you bitch! I finished reading this book, like, the day after it came out, and literally 10 minutes after I put it down, Caleb and his friends walked into the house, and one of his friends said, "Pick up, Snape kills Dumbledore!" And I was like, I already knew that, motherfucker! It's like, you are so lucky I'm done with this book, or I would beat the shit out of you.
Sounds like something one of Caleb's friends would do. I do remember when the movie came out, there were a lot of fans of the books taking a great deal of glee and driving past lines of people waiting to get into the movie and shouting, "Snape killed Dumbledore."
Should have read the books, dude.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for them.
It's kind of a dick move, but at the same time, I also don't feel bad for them.
When you're a Harry Potter book snob, like...
Yeah.
I was complaining about that. Scott's like, you're a book snob.
Totally.
Like, whatever.
I wouldn't be such a book snob, but movies are always worse.
Except for, like, two of them.
Yeah. Except for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So this week we are joined by Jessica.
Hello.
She already talked, but I just thought I'd mention you have a name.
I mentioned her by name.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, you said...
But I didn't introduce her. Don't worry, we'll introduce our guest in just a minute.
I'm their biggest fan.
It's true.
I listen to all of the podcasts, even the ones that suck.
Oh.
Which are like one.
Which is like all of them.
Which is most of them. Hey, no one's heard the Atonement podcast, so you don't even know the depths.
That's true.
The depths of our horror.
The depths of which we are capable.
Yeah, and I guess we haven't specifically said the title yet for this week. It's Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
And the Half-Blood Prince.
Did someone break your nose while you were in the Ministry of Magic?
Stubblefly!
Harry Potter.
I haven't recovered from book
and
five
the
yet.
And the Half-Blood Prince.
I'm Neville this week. I'm a potato. Yeah, so once again, blah, blah, blah. We're going to ignore all of the introductory material because... who cares? Except for the plot synopsis, which I think Jessica should have the honor of saying.
Oh, well, let her.
Oh, okay. Harry Potter is Spider-Man.
She's the one who came up with it.
Spider-Man.
That'll become clear later on, but that's all you have to know is that Harry Potter is Spider-Man. And not in the fact that he shoots weird secretions out of his body.
Ugh,
though
not.
He does.
Though that does happen quite a bit.
Especially in that fan fiction I wrote.
You said he and Jenny spent a particularly happy hour, so...
Yeah, that's right.
What were they doing?
What was so happy about that hour?
I don't know.
They were learning how to juggle. They're
probably holding hands and...
That's probably true.
Stroking each other's hair.
Yeah, like...
whispering loving words.
Knowing Harry. Harry is, like, kind of a lame sexual dynamo, like...
They read Maurice and decided to reenact.
Go hang out in a boathouse and cuddle. Except that the difference is that in Maurice, Alex would totally have been like, let's get our bone on.
Oh, I bet more like the dormitory stuff.
Oh, gotcha. He's stroking the hair.
Leaning against his legs and having his hair stroked. And for some reason, nobody thought there was anything sexual about that.
Harry and Ron do that all the time, right?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
It's just the thing that Englishmen do.
It's just a general English trait. Anywho. Yeah, referencing a book that, like, no one read or listened to the podcast. So, we're congratulations.
We're trying to make them go back.
Yeah, listen to Maurice. That book was good, damn it.
That was a good episode, damn it.
It was good.
See?
Oh, and I'm reading Maurice right now.
Oh, yeah?
By the way. I just remembered that.
So that's how you know Jessica loves us. Yeah, she right. listens to Maurice.
One of the three
Maurice
people who listen to Maurice.
Our mom and Jessica.
And me, because I had to listen to it to edit it.
I actually listened to it,
that's the three.
So, two people who recorded it. Anyway. So we don't get introduced to a ton of new characters in this book. We're actually going to talk about a lot of people we've seen before.
Yes.
But we do have... at least one really significant new character.
Horace Slughorn, the new potions professor.
Which is the first twist in the book.
Yes.
Because you think he's going to be the new Defense Against the Dark Arts, but...
Turns out Snape finally achieved his ambition.
And then he doesn't seem like he's a very good Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. Because he's still just a dick to Harry in class.
That's true. He like, does seem to know a lot of dark arts,
yeah.
though.
And appreciate it.
Yes.
But still.
And Slughorn is also the old potions teacher.
Oh, right. And he went to retirement.
Yes. He is a former head of the Slytherin house. And so that's kind of like the first significant thing about him is that he's a Slytherin who's not a dick to everybody all the time. The first one we've met, I think.
Yeah, we were discussing how Slytherins shouldn't all be bad guys. And Slughorn's not a bad guy. He's even friendly.
He's genial. He's like, come to my party. Now you have to be someone who's connected, because he's totally pulling strings and setting things up in the background, all Slytherin style.
Yeah.
But he's real friendly about it. And if you didn't mind... being part of that network, it's like, okay, I get to have a dinner party every couple weeks. That's not so bad.
And he's, you know, if you rub my back, I'll rub yours.
Definitely,
so
definitely.
He does only want to rub elbows with people who are connected or powerful, but at the same time, if you're talented and you want a job in the ministry and Slughorn likes you, he'll help you get a job in the ministry.
Exactly.
As long as once you have that job in the ministry, you give him some sort of reward.
Yeah.
So... it's not all, I mean, it is definitely self-serving, but he's not so selfish that he never does anything in return.
It's really pretty standard networking stuff. I mean, like, everybody does that to some degree, and the people who are friendly and nice about it and who are legitimately happy and willing to do you a favor, like, those people are great.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're totally being manipulative if you think about it, but I don't have a problem with it.
Well, the worst he does is ignore people occasionally.
Yeah.
I mean, if he doesn't find you interesting, he ignores you, but he doesn't.
Like, he never figures out what Ron's name is.
Right.
For example.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it sounds like he's been spelling all of his papers Runel Weasley.
Yeah.
But, I forgot about that. But he's also not, you know, he might not really care about you if you're not connected or talented, but he doesn't pick on you. So he's not sitting in class looking at the kids who aren't doing as well, like, 15 points from Gryffindor. You're getting an F. You know?
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, whatever. Middle of the road. You're cool.
Yeah. He's like, ooh, Ron. He's like, ooh, that potion is nasty. Randall or whatever your name is. But he's not 10 points from Gryffindor, you incompetent boob.
Yeah. He's not all Snape about it. And I really like that we do finally get a Slytherin. This is an example of how you can be in the Slytherin house and be a person that people like.
Yes.
And even a good person.
It should be possible.
But be ambitious and cunning at the same time.
He is to Slytherin what Cedric Diggory is to Hufflepuff.
Kind yeah.
of. So, you know.
Yeah, he's the
example.
Yeah. If you were going to choose someone to be the personification of the good version of their values. I don't know if you could find a bad version of the Hufflepuff values.
No.
But Cedric's the bravest and smartest of them all, apparently.
Yes. We write songs about him. If this was Tolkien, there would totally be a song about him by this book.
They would have been singing it.
Well, it's death
in,
scene, yeah.
In book six, when Hagrid and Slughorn get drunk and they're singing the song about, like... Mm-hmm. That wizard guy. They would have been seen at Cedric.
That's true. That was actually kind of a Tolkien-esque scene in some ways.
Yeah. But then it was funny.
I mean, yeah, it was not in the same tone, but that they were singing this epic tale about some wizard long past.
And Harry was just like, get drunker.
Yeah. Nonverbal refilling spell.
That's right.
Good thing he learned nonverbal spells.
Yeah.
That'd be a handy...
Which he stops using the second.
Wow. Would be a handy spell to know.
That would be. I get that person drunk.
It's like, do I want to go to the liquor store? Oh, wait, I still have some beer left in this glass.
Sweet.
A rat, a rat, a rat.
Seems cheating, but whatever, wizards.
So there is a new minister of magic.
Rufus Scrimgeour?
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 I have no Scrimgeour? Idea.
I do not know how to say that guy's name. But he is, Fudge, I think, unsurprisingly gets fired.
Well, after spending a whole year denying that Voldemort is back, only to have him show up in the lobby of the government building.
And kill someone.
It's kind of awkward.
Probably should have figured that one out.
It'd be like if the whole year preceding 9/11, the president had been on television every week telling us that terrorism was gone forever and we had nothing to worry about.
Never going to happen ever again.
It's like the Wizarding World's equivalent of that happening. And then the towers fall and that guy wouldn't be in office anymore.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Impeached.
Get out.
Yeah, it's not like this Voldemort thing came out of nowhere.
Yeah. They were definitely ignoring some. Yeah, so Scrimgeour is more of the, almost like the old retired general minister type.
Yeah, has like the old battle wound, we assume, because he walks with a limp and looks hardened and tough, and turns out is just another politician, pretty much.
He's basically Fudge still.
Yeah.
Fudge with a mane.
Yeah. Yep. He looks like a lion, so he's trustworthy.
Trying to make the ministry look like it's doing stuff, but in reality it's probably not doing anything that's actually all that useful.
Yeah, they're still, hiding some stuff and trying to get Harry on their side and making arrests they know are pointless.
Right, again, so it looks like they're doing something. Oh, see, we arrested people. We are going after dark wizards. Okay, are those people actually dangerous? We arrested people, so we're doing stuff. But did you arrest the right people? No, you see, we arrested... Oh, okay.
Harry's like, why didn't you let them go? Well, then it looks embarrassing that we arrested the wrong people and had to let them go.
It doesn't look embarrassing that you're holding an innocent person? We have this nifty pamphlet on defending yourself against dark wizards. Is it useful?
We have a pamphlet.
It's like this pamphlet says to put plastic sheeting and duct tape around my house. That would be Voldemort out.
Yeah, Avada Kedavra is stopped by plastic sheeting and duct tape.
I feel like Fred and George are almost doing more than Scrimgeour or whatever to help defend things, making their shield helmets and stuff at their joke shop, actually.
Yeah, a lot of their joke shop materials are apparently being bought as... I guess wizard military paraphernalia.
I did really like how, they came up with an idea with a shield charm as a joke, and then the minister was like, "Oh yeah, we'll buy 500 of those for our support staff."
Be handy. You don't have to worry about throwing up a shield charm if someone throws a curse at you. You already have one on your head.
Yeah,
kind of makes sense.
further proof of Fred and George actually being really good wizards.
Right.
And not just randos, like, running around making jokes all the time. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and I guess just not much more to say about Scrimgeour as a character for now.
I mean, he and Dumbledore don't get along. That's
yeah,
that's something. They don't really see eye to eye.
It's because they both... Yeah, they just see the world differently, and with Harry being kind of a key point of contention, because the Ministry wants to use him, and Dumbledore knows that he's going to be the key to everything, but that Harry needs to, like, actually... that he needs to be aware of what he's doing and not just be, like, a face man or something.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he's actually going to have to go confront Voldemort at some point.
Also, you can't tell everyone what's actually going on with Harry, because that would be bad for Harry.
Yes, yeah. It would.
Because then Voldemort would be like, oh, okay, now I know exactly why he's important.
Yeah.
Let's go kill him.
Okay, Callie.
Shut up. I know you love this book, but no one wants your cat opinion.
We have the return of Fleur
mm-hmm.
from Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, if you remember us talking about her being the worst champion.
Because she's a girl.
Yeah, because she's a girl.
Now she's Bill's fiance.
And still driving people crazy, apparently.
Yeah, though I didn't think she was that bad for the most part.
I didn't really either. They just...
I don't know, I think there was, like, cattiness going on with Ginny and Hermione and Molly kind of uh-huh. talking about her, and I wonder if it just comes partially from jealousy.
Like, she's so pretty.
Right.
They did, Mrs. Weasley's concern about them being too young, I think, was legitimate, because Bill was, I guess, graduated already by Volume 1, but he was fresh into his job,
uh-huh.
so this is, what, 5 years later?
Yeah.
So he's probably...
23,
but Fleur is definitely no more than 18.
18, 19? I guess she was in her 7th year in book 4.
Okay, so she was in her 7th, not her 6th year.
She would be 19.
Okay, but to be fair, 19 is really young to get married.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then I like the counter act of, you and Dad got married when you were that age.
That's true.
Well, we were meant for each other, so what's the use of waiting?
That is true, that was funny.
Hypocrite. But I also then liked... the commentary that a ton of people are getting married because in times of war like that, people just get married fast and young.
That's true, too. Yep.
That does happen.
Yeah. I mean, the baby boom happened because a giant war had just ended and...
everyone went crazy.
Yeah, everyone was going nuts.
Or even just on a smaller scale... pretty much everyone I know who's ever entered the military is married, like, a year later.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Those military folks do seem to get married while they're still on active duty, which means they're usually no more than 22 years old.
Mm-hmm. It's very much a thing, so...
have somebody waiting for you at home, I guess.
Yeah, knowing that you have someone who's, your mm-hmm. moral support, so...
And at the end of the book, you see that Fleur is... has not been given enough credit, perhaps, by the Weasley women.
Yeah. They think she's just into Bill because he's a hot dude.
Because he's cool. That was always Harry's impression.
Yeah, Harry
of
just
Bill.
Thought Bill was really cool.
He's so cool. So Bill probably was popular with the ladies.
Yeah. And then when his face gets all tore up, Fleur's like, whatever.
She's like, no.
I'm pretty enough for the both of us.
Yeah, I love that line. I'm quite pretty enough. All these scars shows that I have a brave husband.
That's right. She's like, you kidding? Look at my badass husband.
And then Mrs. Weasley's like, okay. I love you.
Yeah,
welcome,
like, oh,
to the family.
You love my son. You'll protect him like I try to do when I'm not around. That fucking cat. Callie's feeling catty towards Fleur as well. You are so whiny.
Why are you doing?
Because we're recording. We haven't recorded out here in a long time, so... Callie is... yes! My chance to be on the air!
She's... what are they called? A kneasel? She's a kneasel. She wants to be on the air. They're, like, really, really smart cats.
Yeah.
Magical cats.
The entire time I was coming back to the room.
You're like, Gally.
Shut the fuck up.
Damn.
You could just come sit on my lap for the recording if you would shut up.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want? So our other guest today, Gally the cat.
Yeah, sorry about that. She knows that.
We have the introduction of Fenrir Greyback, a...
douche.
Another werewolf with a very wolfy name.
Yeah, true.
I say Fenrir being the Norse, like, wolf that will swallow the world.
And then Greyback, which is just...
Like, come on.
Like, he's born to be a werewolf, I guess.
Do werewolves change their names? I guess Lupin was very young, so everyone always knew him as Remus Lupin.
Yeah.
Like, is that part of the bite process? He actually used to be, like, Ronald Looper or something.
I could see Fenrir changing his name because he's really into being a werewolf.
Yeah, yes, Fenrir is an example of why people don't like werewolves. Because he's a dick.
He positions himself outside children's houses on the full moon.
Yeah, he's not...
So he can bite them, take them away from their parents, and raise them to be monsters.
So he's rude.
Yeah. It's partly in reaction... it's a little bit in reaction to all that wizard racism, though. Because he's trying to create more werewolves.
Yeah, maybe it's one of those, you know, you expect me to be a monster, so I'm going to be a monster sort of things that he's doing.
He's clearly one of the bad guys, but... his motivations could possibly be understood, if not sympathetic. Stupid wizards. Respect people.
Yeah, and Lupin is... his work right now is basically...
trying to infiltrate the werewolves and convince them that they don't need to join the bad guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like Voldemort. I mean, logically speaking, some of these... magical creatures who lean towards Voldemort's side are not stopping to think, wait, what's he gonna... if he wins and he hates people who are not full-blooded wizards, what do you think he's gonna do with those werewolves after he wins?
But he is manipulating racism because, you know, wizards look down on werewolves, and Voldemort's like, I'll give you all the, you know, victims you want. Wizards scared off giants. I'll let you come bash wizards together.
I mean, that's true. I'm just... It's short... I think it's short-sighted.
I agree, because probably after he wins the war, he just turns around and kill all of them, but...
Well, it's that whole idea. It's something I've heard people say before of... So, Japan and Germany were allies in World War II. If they had won, did Japan really think Hitler was going to treat them as equals afterwards?
Yeah.
Because it's not like they were a bunch of blue-eyed white dudes.
That's true.
That's a good comparison.
In fact, if I saw a blue-eyed white man in Japan, I would not think he was Japanese.
Why not?
Pretty much assume he was not.
I was going to actually, real quick, about Lupin trying to infiltrate the werewolves. I thought it was interesting that he's looked down upon by general wizarding society, but then when he goes... to hang out with the werewolves, he's looked down upon by them because he's been trying to live as a wizard in wizarding society.
Right.
So it's one of those...
can't win.
Can't fit in either situation. Like, it reminds me of,
is
you know...
Is he Joe Christmas?
No! I was gonna use a way better comparison than not involved
that character. It's funny. Almost should... podcast no. A Light in August, even though I really, really, really don't want to read it again. We haven't had a good, strong hate episode in a while.
Jesus. I was just going to say, it's like, you know, if you're a Korean kid born in the United... if you're born to Korean parents in the United States, and you grow up as an American, but other Americans look at you and go, oh, you're Asian, even though you grew up in America. And then you go to Korea, and then all the Koreans are like, you're American.
Yep.
It's kind of, I mean, and of course it's not exactly the same thing, but it's kind of like that misplaced, transplanted character.
Right.
not even talking about Joe Christmas.
We learn a bunch more about Dumbledore.
Yeah.
He's around quite a bit. He and Harry are, he's giving Harry private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Showing him memories, kind of researching Voldemort. Past, I guess.
Yeah, this is a really cool thread because Dumbledore decided the best way to learn how to defeat Voldemort was by finding out where he came from and what his thoughts and plans were before he became the evil character he is now. Which is really smart.
It is really smart. He's acting like a kind of a criminal profiler following the crazy serial killer, figuring out his motivations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
so to speak.
You turn something up from... You can turn something up about a person you're hunting for. Maybe you can figure out where they'd be hiding or what kinds of things they'd be likely to do next. And
yeah.
It makes sense because everyone else in the wizarding world seems to be just bunkering down and...
Hoping Voldemort doesn't show up
like
at their house.
Clutching their knees to their chest and rocking back and forth, going, can't say his name, can't say his name, can't say his name.
And Dumbledore's like, whatever. Tom Riddle.
Yeah.
Go and ask people about him.
It's like, Tom. Tommy, buddy.
Tommy, buddy. I love how he always calls him Tom to his face.
That's true.
Because one of the things we learn about Voldemort is that he tried to distance himself from his name at a very young age.
Yeah.
So Dumbledore's basically saying fuck you every time he talks to him by refusing to call him anything but his given name.
Dumbledore is the master of the polite fuck you.
He totally is.
He will use polite words and a cheerful attitude in a way that indicates he has utter contempt for what you're saying and possibly what you are.
Especially in one of the first scenes with the Dursleys.
Yeah.
You know, he's offering them drinks, and they continue to hit them upside the head, and when they won't drink them, he's like, well, you know, it would have been politer for you to drink it, but...
Yeah.
Which I agree with, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Or when he's...
Like, how hard is it just to... Like, even if you didn't want anything to do with the guy or his magic drink that could be anything, wouldn't you pluck it out of the air so it'd stop hitting you in the head?
Yeah. I would drink it.
Dursleys are afraid of magic.
Yeah. I still like in that scene when he says, you know, I gave you Harry and you mistreated him and never showed him any love, but at least you didn't abuse him as bad as your son.
I love that.
That
I
was
love
funny.
That.
And Dudley is looking around like, when was I abused?
he said, like, the person in between you. And he's like,
yeah.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. Abused daughters? Oh, the Dursleys. They're silly dumbs.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and it's the most you ever see of Dumbledore from all the previous books, because usually in the other books he kind of pops up at the end and gives his chapter or two long conversation with Harry to catch you up on everything, and then
right.
kind of pops out again. And this one we actually get to see him for extended amounts of time throughout the book. And really, well, I guess we got to witness his powers at the end of book 5. But you really get to see more of the extent of his magic. Him talking about how he got the memories and going to eat the Horcrux.
It's more subtle.
Yeah, I was going to say, the end of book 5 is more him showing his, like, power. And the end of book 6, and I guess all of book 6, but especially the end of book 6, is more him showing, like, the depth and breadth of his magical knowledge.
Because
in book 5 he's doing combat dueling magic, and 6 he's holding his hand out and like detecting things that other wizards probably wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, like how he just says to Harry, this place has no magic. And Harry's like, what? That's a very Gandalf moment for
me. Yeah, it is.
It reminded me of, like, the Mines of Moria.
Yeah.
I have a feeling Gandalf and Dumbledore would...
Get along. They're both really good at encouraging people that everyone else overlooks, but who are way stronger and smarter than most people think.
I could definitely see, like, a Gandalf, Frodo, Dumbledore, Harry parallel.
Yeah.
Like, they'd hang out with each other and compare beards, and the Lord of the Rings is a much more serious in tone series for the most part, but I feel like he'd sit back and smoke some pikeweed and Dumbledore would knock back some mead and they'd have a good time.
Yeah,
talk
I
about
agree.
old guy wizard stuff.
I agree. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of hobbits? Dumbledore would love hobbits.
Oh, God. Dumbledore fucking loves him some hobbits.
He's like, no wonder Gandalf thinks hobbits are amazing.
The best. Yeah.
So when Dumbledore the White returns in the next volume.
I smell a fan fiction.
Okay, did we mention Dumbledore dies at the end of the book?
Spoiler! just kidding.
If it turned out that those two books were using, like, the same magical system for the universe, that would blow my mind. They clearly aren't, because Gandalf's magic is
much different.
Mostly not very flashy.
Yeah.
Compared to this universe's magic, but...
There's a lot more magic in these
books. Well, in that case, let's talk about Voldemort some more.
Some more Voldemort.
Since we were learning all about him in this book.
Yeah, which I thought was really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we find out that... I mean, we kind of knew that he and Harry had parallels. Both of them lost their parents very, very young, were not raised in a very loving environment. We do find out that Tom Riddle, at the age of 11, when finds out he's a wizard and can go to Hogwarts, has already been using magic to manipulate and terrify the other children in the orphanage.
Yeah, I think the scene where Dumbledore goes to tell Tom Riddle that he is a wizard is one of the most illuminating on his character, because he's already figuring out how to intimidate the other kids in the orphanage. He's taking their stuff to have these little treasure objects.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really independent and not too keen on making it...
You're getting help from adults, especially like when Dumbledore gives him his school list. You know, he's like, "Oh, are you coming with me to help me?" And Dumbledore is like, "Yeah, I mean, I was going to." And he's like, "No, I don't want you to come. You know, I'd rather do it by myself. Like, I don't need your help."
Well, and when Dumbledore walks in, he's even immediately distrustful as far as saying like, "Oh, you must be from a mental institution.
Right?
I'm not going."
And. Well, yeah, I mean, he was kind of carving out his own little power base. Within the orphanage, he was probably the most intimidating kid. Like, in the non-adult figures, he probably had more power than anybody else there. He was already setting up his little empire, I think.
Uh-huh.
We also see in these memories of Tom Riddle that before he had become so irrevocably dark that his appearance had... severely changed. He was very capable of turning on the charm to help him manipulate people and get what he wanted.
He's apparently super handsome. Until he started fucking around.
Until he started looking like a snake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think once you start cutting off pieces of your soul, it
affects you a little bit.
A bit of an impact on you, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like as he got inwardly more and more ugly, he got also outwardly more and more ugly.
Yeah, there's probably some of that going on, too.
He doesn't have a picture of Dorian Gray to store away somewhere.
That's a Horcrux, too!
Though he did totally get owned by whoever R.A.B. is.
Yeah, he totally did. R.A.B.'s like, what up, motherfucker?
Though Harry was kind of, what the hell, in that moment.
I don't blame him.
I would have too.
Which all this trouble to get a Horcrux, and it turns out it's a fake locket and a fuck you note from somebody inside. Great.
Good thing Dumbledore died for it.
Right. I open this locket, and all that's inside is a picture of...
A middle finger.
Yeah, a picture of somebody mooning the camera with R.A.B. tattooed on their butt cheek. In my mind, that's what was actually in the locket. Well, this wouldn't be a Harry Potter Pottercast extravaganza without talking about Draco.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe we've gone this long without talking about Draco.
Draco in this book, kind of not a dick.
I know.
He's actually there for a reason this time, as opposed to just being obnoxious.
The first hint of characterization of Draco.
I mean, he does a bad thing in letting Death Eaters into the school, but at the same time, he comes with a really clever way to do it. He gets around all the defensive magic and charms that have been put on the school by Dumbledore himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was... Wow, Draco. Like, that's smart.
Good job. And it also... One thing I thought was really cool about how Draco uses the Vanishing Cabinet to get the Death Eaters in is he realized he could use it when one of his friends got stuffed into it in the last book, by Fred and George. Right. And so I was like, inadvertently, Fred and George are the reason Draco was able to get Death Eaters into Hogwarts. That's kind of awesome. Like, not in an awesome way, but...
Well, in like a connecting the dots between the two books way.
Yeah.
Like an incident of, that Slytherin's being a dick and Fred and George jammed him into the van.
Yeah, it's just totally a throwaway, like, yeah, he'll be fine.
It's like, oh no, that's actually a thing later.
Yeah, well, the fact
she did it again!
Draco had the presence of mind to actually pay attention to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something you normally associate with his character. You're just kind of like, oh, you're very punchable. Like, that's why you're here.
He's just make snide comments. Swaggering around and bullying people.
Well, he must be fairly competent in his own right, because he does end up in the Newt Lovell's potions class and Defense Against the Dark Arts, so, I mean, he did something right, far as school is concerned. He's not just an idiot.
It is kind of good to be reminded of that every once in a while, that some of these people actually are, like, passing their classes, probably pretty good wizards and witches, even though we don't see them doing it necessarily.
Yeah.
And then the scene where... And Draco's also been sent on a mission to kill Dumbledore.
By Voldemort.
And we get to see a couple other aspects of Draco. Crying in the bathroom to Moaning Myrtle, because who the hell else is he going to talk to?
That was some of my favorite Draco revelation is... Oh, look, he has feelings.
Right.
He's crying in the bathroom and talking to someone about how shitty his situation is. I thought that was really cool.
And then the confrontation with Dumbledore at the end, where Dumbledore just keeps saying, "You're not a killer, Draco."
Yeah, if the other Death Eaters hadn't busted in, we could assume that Draco would have not killed him and gone into hiding under his protection, Dumbledore's protection.
Yeah.
Because Harry says it looks like he starts lowering his wand.
Yeah, just as they walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid Death Eaters ruin everything.
Yeah, right?
They suck.
The other thing about Draco... is we have the scene Harry overhears between him and Snape where he's accusing Snape of trying to steal his glory. So he's a little bit of that teenager needing to impress going on at the same time of, I have to do this or Voldemort will kill my family.
Right.
And he must not be a complete dick, because we do also find out that his mom loves him.
Yeah, though that could just also be the mother's love thing.
Because it's his mom.
Which, for everyone other than Tom Riddle, seems to be a thing.
Well, she loves him enough to disobey Voldemort and ask for help in protecting him. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it fits the theme of the series overall, too.
Yeah, it does.
It's definitely family and love. I mean, if you haven't caught on to those two things, then...
I mean, go straight up said multiple times. And Dumbledore, you know, talks about how Voldemort's biggest weakness is that he never learned how to love. And here we see, you know, one of his followers is going to disobey him because of love of her son. And I don't think that would have ever crossed his mind that she would do that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it comes up a lot, like, with Jedi as well as wizards. Like, you kind of look at it and on the surface you go, so, like, the dark side is stronger than the light side, right? Because they're less inhibited by things like values and morals.
Yeah, trying to protect other people.
But then, like, the light side in a lot of stories turns out to be more powerful, but just in more subtle ways. Because, I mean, like, love can deflect the Avada Kedavra, which is supposed to be unblockable. Or how, you know, Luke being steadfastly on the light side can turn Vader after years as a dark Jedi.
That's true. Spoiler alert for Star Wars.
just for a parallel, yeah. Or he's even thinking in the Dresden Files, there are a couple instances. There's a guy who uses holy magic, and his family, because he's a righteous guy who loves his family, like, basically God personally protects this guy's family from darkness, so they're perfectly safe at home no matter who this guy pisses off. Like, this idea of the light side being strong just because of bonds, I think.
Well, yeah, there's always the misconception of caring about people is a weakness because then I can kidnap your wife and torture her and manipulate you, but then at the same time it always ends up that caring about other people ends up being a strength instead.
Well, right, like, I mean, when Harry is marching off at the end of this book to hunt down Voldemort's Horcruxes.
To be Spider-Man.
His two best friends say, dude, no. You're getting help on this whether you want it or not. And he wouldn't have succeeded on his own.
Or even with Dumbledore going to find the Horcrux and taking Harry with him, and he realizes if one person came to do this on their own, they wouldn't be able to.
Right, it wouldn't be possible. And to Voldemort, it never seemed a possibility that, like, more than one person would be willing to go to the trouble of hunting down his Horcruxes.
Specifically because Harry's underage and he doesn't think he's worth anything because of it. So he's, again, underestimating the small guy, basically.
Right.
It's like when the bad guys in Lord of the Rings are like, well, there's hobbits. Right. And then Gandalf's like, lol.
That's what you think.
All right, well, let's get into some of our moral issues, perhaps.
Okay. Well, feminism. So I'm not going to, like, really complain about lack of female characters or anything this time. I just wanted to bring up a couple of points. So the first one is this whole Ginny is a slut theme. Not in the books. I'm not saying that Rowling is trying to paint her as a slut, because I don't think she is. But you have her brothers being all indignant about she has 100 boyfriends or whatever. And one of the things that happened in the fandom of Harry Potter around this time was a lot of fans of the books were saying the same thing. I remember getting online and seeing people complaining about how Ginny was a huge whore and she's not good enough for Harry because she's slutty. And I was sitting there going, she had two boyfriends for a long time, really a year apiece. And then after she had broken up with one of them, a couple months later, she started dating Harry. How is any of that slutty?
It's not. She didn't cheat on anybody. She didn't jump willy-nilly from boy to boy.
Yeah, she had, like, two serious boyfriends. She never does anything with Harry, as far as we can tell, that is like, she's not trying to poison him with a love potion.
Right?
No, it's not like Romilda Vane is a lot worse Romilda than Vane, Ginny.
Comma, date rapist, question
yeah,
mark.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's way, way worse. So, I just think that's bullshit.
Well, she has a lot of self-confidence. She doesn't have a low self-esteem issue, which I feel like a lot of slutty people who sleep around tend to have. She's very strong.
Yeah, and that's probably the reason boys like her, is because she's cool. They're like, oh, that chick's badass. She's a dater.
People think.
Yeah, I think when her brothers say, yeah, you've had like 50 boyfriends, they're just doing the brother thing, you know?
I agree with that.
Like, God, Ginny, you're always dating some dude. And she's like, yeah, I am, but it's like the same dude.
Yeah. I just like that anytime Ron or Fred or George accuses her of being slutty, she immediately retorts with like, you're an idiot.
Yep. Just because no girls like you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're offended I'm kissing my boyfriend because you don't have a girlfriend. And Ron's like, oh shit.
I'm gonna go cry now.
It's a very brother-sister exchange.
Yeah. Definitely. So.
And we have Tonks, who is mopey for the whole book, and it turns out because
the boy she likes doesn't like her back.
Yeah, basically.
Essentially.
Okay, Bella.
Yeah.
God. That's rough.
Sorry, Tonks.
Yeah,
I'm not sorry.
The thing that upsets me about Tonks the most is in book 5, we don't get a ton of her, but she's cool in book 5. She seems pretty quirky and fun. She's an Auror, so she's probably pretty badass. And then in book 6, she's just totally wrecked, and you're like, well, you know, her cousin did just die. Like, that's a pretty good reason to be depressed. And then it's like, oh no, she disliked a guy who wouldn't date her, so she couldn't do magic anymore, and her Patronus changed, and she couldn't change her hair color. And then you're just like, what? That's lame.
I know, survivor's guilt seemed like a much better explanation for that.
And the other problem is it just comes so out of nowhere.
Yeah, Lupin.
Yeah, it was not set up at all.
Because Harry's guess about Sirius is pretty decent, and makes sense. And then just randomly, like, I'm in love with Lupin!
I mean, the previous book was so long, you really couldn't have just thrown in an extra sentence in a scene here and there about her making Mooney eyes at him, or...
You know, like, saying spunky, flirty things.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Exactly.
In the vein of old Tom.
Or kind of standing just a little closer to him than, like, it's really easy to work those subtle hints in.
Yeah.
Especially in a 900-page book.
Yeah, and in this one, I feel like there was a subtle hint or two, but they were too subtle. Like, Harry's talking about her being freaked out when she hears someone in the werewolf camp gets attacked. And, yeah. Oh, at the end... Oh, she was worried about Lupin. It's like, but who would put those two things together when you read that for the first time?
Right. Yeah, in hindsight, they make sense, but there's no way to see him coming before that.
Yeah. And she should just stay, like, cool instead of being a loser.
In summary. And then also along the feminist lines, we have Hermione getting... quite irritated that everyone assumes the prince is a man.
The half-blood prince, yeah. Or girl.
She's like, it could be girl. They're like, prince. Prince is a man.
I like the exchange where she says, you just don't think a girl can be clever. And Harry's like, come off it. How could I hang out with you and think girls can't be clever? He's like really offended
I like that he was legitimately offended by it. It's like, Hermione.
She does have a point, though.
And said, also described her as the best in their ear.
Yeah.
Because when Slughorn threw that out there, she was pretty pleased with that.
She's like, did you really say that, Harry?
And then Ron's like, I would have said it to you, R.
Poor Ron.
Come on, Ron.
Ron.
Just ask her if you'll make out with you already.
Yeah, book six, by
fact,
the way.
Don't ask her, just try it, because she will.
Book six is where it becomes glaringly obvious that Ron and Hermione want to have sex with each other. And if you hadn't figured it out before, she basically just tells you straight up in this book.
Yeah, Ron is trying really, really hard to impress Hermione.
But in the wrong way.
Hermione's
too stubborn to... help him.
Yeah, she's like, I'm gonna wait for him to figure it out. Because she has much a sense of that at one point. Like, I'm not asking him out. I'm waiting for him to stop being a dope, basically.
Well, she is asking to Slughorn's party.
That's true.
Kind of.
Until he's a douchebag.
Until he's an idiot.
Until he's insensitive wrong.
He's mad at her because she made out with a guy, like...
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Idiot.
Harry's like... You said something about how Harry doesn't know how to explain to Hermione what she did wrong 2 years ago. Just, Ron.
Yeah, this is the book that really puts the sexual tension among teenagers in full swing.
Yeah, this is the first time they really all start going nuts.
Yeah, there's like a 3-chapter stretch where there's a high snog per page ratio.
Ginny's snogging Dean, Ron's snogging Lavender, everyone else is talking about snogging other people. It's a little crazy.
The word snog appears a lot.
I do like how you have the crazy sexual teen tension going on, and then at the same time you have these really dark, fucked up things going on, and they're happening at the same time.
Hey man, hormones don't take a day off.
Yeah, I know. I think that's like funny that Harry's really looking at these dark memories of Voldemort's past, splitting his soul into seven by murdering people, and then he like leaves the office, and Hermione's pissed because like Ron's making out with his girlfriend in the corridor,
or he starts daydreaming about being with Ginny in a deserted corridor.
The monster in his chest.
Oh, right.
What the fuck, Harry?
There's a little bit more of the wizard racism in this book. It's not really introducing new wizard racism, it's just still there, as that does seem to be the primary motivation of Voldemort's followers.
Yeah, the pure blood, mud blood dichotomy.
Ugh, what a hypocrite.
Yeah, I know.
I know, it's
every time that
it's
comes
maddening.
Up.
Your dad was a muggle.
You fool.
He killed him, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah, that makes it all right.
And his grandparents.
We talked about the Ministry of Magic being kind of in wartime government mode and maybe not being particularly good. J.K. Rowling doesn't seem to have a very high opinion of politicians.
Yeah. And I haven't finished reading her new book because I suck, but the view of politicians in that one didn't seem great either.
It's not. It's definitely not.
So.
So why don't we hit some of these plot points and see if there's anything we have left unturned we need to talk about still.
Yeah, I guess the other minister chapter, just to mention it, because the book starts off with the Muggle Prime Minister getting visited by Fudge and then Scrimgeour. And it was a nice way for J.K. Rowling to step back and show you the political tensions at the time and how it's affecting the wizarding world and the Muggle world. Because I love that exchange where he's like, I've been having a horrible week. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, the bridge breaking was Death Eaters, the hurricane was actually giants, and the murders were of wizards.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that there's a little bit of bleed over between the two worlds, and that the Prime Minister is kept informed of the magic of ministry, and
he seems fairly competent, actually, as far as politicians in this book.
He takes it pretty well in stride. I mean,
he's kind of frustrated that it's stuff that he can't really deal with.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then the next chapter about the Unbreakable Vow, where Narcissa Malfoy basically makes Snape promise to watch after Draco.
And do what he is supposed to, what Draco is supposed to do.
Which he does.
He does.
I guess we can't really talk about that. But I do think it's cool that you don't know exactly what Draco's supposed to be doing at the end when you find out he's supposed to kill Dumbledore and Snape does it instead.
Yep.
That's all tying back to the beginning of the book, so.
Oh man, next podcast.
Yeah, there are going to be some
stay quiet.
Interesting things to talk about with the next book. It's also worth noting that those two chapters are only like the maybe second and third chapters in the whole series where Harry's not present. I guess in the very first chapter, the very first book, he's present as an infant at the end of the chapter. So I guess that one's not through his eyes either. But it's very, very rare that we get a glimpse of events without Harry present.
Chapter
the
one
beginning
of book four.
Yeah, the fourth book.
And then that's it.
Yep. So we also get just a hint. Get a little bit of dramatic irony in there too that way. Alright, so.
Oh, let's see.
I don't know how much of this is actually that important.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking.
The Half-Blood Prince's Potions book is worth mentioning because we've barely touched on it at this point. Harry is taking instructions out of margin notes and such in this old potions textbook from this brilliant student who referred to himself as the Half-Blood Prince.
Or herself.
And is having quite a bit of success in his potions class. Learns some interesting curses, one of which is really nasty and almost kills Draco.
Yeah, which is not cool.
Yeah.
Harry using random curses, he don't know what they do.
Yeah, that was...
You're an idiot.
That was the one thing he took from the book where I was 100% in agreement with Hermione. I kind of was... Like, what she was saying about, hey, maybe you should be careful with this thing, I think was valid advice. I think in Harry's shoes, I probably still would have been
using it to make my potions better.
Right.
Yeah.
She was getting, like, straight A's.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't really blame him for that, honestly.
It does make me wonder how much they've, like, theory of potion making they get in their potions class.
Or if they just follow instructions on a list.
Yeah, because, I mean, how do you figure out that if the seventh stir is in the opposite direction, it makes the potion more potent?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's gotta be a theory behind this stuff for that to make sense.
Right.
Or when he uses an alternate ingredient and Slughorn goes, oh, that'll take care of one of these annoying side effects.
Yeah, you put some peppermint in there and that... Yeah.
So, why wouldn't Slughorn tell them that at some point? You think that maybe they mix the potion the conventional way in the next class. Maybe in the half periods. It's only when they have double potions they mix them in, and the other ones they talk about why it was mixed that way or something.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be a logic to it, but if they're just building potions out of lists, why even take a class? Why not just sell everyone a potions book and tell them to keep it on them?
Why didn't everyone just pass potions? Because it doesn't sound that hard.
But it turns out the Half-Blood Prince is Snape.
Yep. His mother was Eileen Prince.
Oh, a woman. Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Hermione was kind of right,
yeah,
even though she was technically wrong.
So his mom was a witch named Eileen Prince who married a muggle man named Snape. therefore Snape is a half-blood and also technically a half-prince.
I do have a problem with that.
Oh, yeah?
Snape is not a Muggle name.
Oh. Tobias Snape.
It should have been the other way around.
Oh, that his dad was a wizard and his mom was a...
Well, no, I mean, his mom, I'm fine with his mom being the wizard, but she should have been the Snape or something.
I got it. I get what you're saying. But then his last name would have been Prince.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it could be unconventional. Work with me here.
Never.
Maybe his other mom could have been.
He had two moms.
That would be amazing.
Snape had two moms. No, then he'd be less of a dick.
Probably.
Well, it would certainly not be polite to gay people to make the one character with two moms the biggest dick in the scene. Yeah.
The fact that he has two moms makes him a huge asshole. No. Yeah, and I guess we should talk about Horcruxes.
What?
Save the best for last.
Because that's pretty important.
It's when you put a piece of your soul into an item.
By killing somebody.
Well, yeah, the way you break off the piece of your soul is by killing someone and damaging your soul.
In cold blood, yeah.
Yeah.
And it finally brings up the relevance of Book 2. Ben and I were defending Book 2 and we were talking about it, but the diary that Harry stabs with the basilisk fang ends up being a Horcrux that Harry destroyed and is the key for Dumbledore really starting to put all those pieces together.
Yep.
Yeah, take that.
Yeah. So all you people who look down your noses at Book 2, fuck you.
Chekhov's diary.
Wasn't just to free Dobby. Because, well, it's Dobby, so.
Yeah, who cares? No, he's important.
We can't talk about that.
So one of the key purposes of seeing all these old memories of Tom Riddle is to see a couple of the objects that he probably was turning into
Horcruxes. Yeah, it was helping to confirm Dumbledore's suspicions by making sure his behavior when he was younger matches up with his idea that he was making Horcruxes. But when he first sees Tom Riddle in the orphanage with his little box of treasures, that becomes a huge point later on because he likes collecting valuable wizard items and turning them to Horcruxes.
That's right.
Is our guess.
Well, and he even works for Borgin and Burks for a while, and that's basically what that business does, is collect interesting...
Rare items.
A lot of evil items, but they also said, you know, just some historical things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I also liked how pointing all that stuff out does seriously show you how Voldemort's shooting himself in the foot.
Yeah.
Because by making Horcruxes out of these famous magical items, it makes them easier to find. And hiding the location is significant to his past. If you learn about his past, then they're easier to find. And, you know, because they were able to find the locket, because Dumbledore knew about the cave from talking to him. And then it was supposed to be Slytherin's locket. And I just think Voldemort should have realized that.
Well, he was being arrogant, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's being him.
He's being himself. Yeah. Because he's doing all of this on his own, he's like, oh, no one else could possibly think of this. Because
yeah.
He has no friends that he confides in or
yeah, exactly.
Does anything like that.
So. But it is interesting how Dumbledore points that out, you mm-hmm. know. Figure out about him and you realize that he's not as brilliant as he thinks he is.
Yep. Well, that's the eventual downfall of most criminals.
Well, I love Dumbledore's point about you create the people who will be your downfall.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, too.
Because he gives Harry the tools to defeat him by singling him out.
There's definitely a thread of choice as a thematic element in this series as well. Because Voldemort unwittingly chooses Harry as his adversary by making assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could have been Neville.
And Harry gets really the opportunity to choose what he wants to do. I mean, he could try to run and hide and ignore this stuff. But, I mean, to Harry, I don't think he would think of these things as a choice. Because of the love, man.
Yeah.
He loves too many people. To, you know, not put himself in horrible danger sometimes. Tough position to be.
Harry. Trying to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. We're getting there.
That's right. We're getting close. He pretty transparently wants to be with Jenny and then finally is. I don't know that we need to really
go
much farther than that. The scene in the cave actually was really interesting, I thought. Just the types of defenses and how Harry and Dumbledore get past them, and Dumbledore doing subtle magic instead of just blasting power at everything. And
but then he does end up blasting power too.
Well, he does end up having to do that, yeah. But I mean, when he was drinking the potion out of the bowl, that was a fairly upsetting scene.
Well, it's the first time you really see a weakness of Dumbledore's, because mm-hmm. he's crying and mumbling about stuff that we don't know what's upsetting him. And
sounded like that potion maybe dredging up nasty memories and stuff.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. And how he's just totally at the mercy of whoever.
Right.
Harry's taking care of him.
Well, and how Harry has to keep lying to get him to drink it down. And just, that's really, it's more disturbing than if they'd had to do something gorier to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it'd been like, okay, you have to, like, hold Dumbledore's hand down and cut a finger off or something. Like, that would actually be less upsetting to me. Because it'd be over much faster.
Yeah. Well, it shows how much Dumbledore trusts Harry. And does not underestimate Harry's capabilities.
Well, and even though Harry is doing a couple things that he really doesn't want to do, Dumbledore accepts that he'll do it because Harry gives him his word on it beforehand.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's absolutely in play there.
And if a wizard that powerful trusts Harry, then Harry can't be completely a dumb idiot. You
not know? Completely.
Hey, he's outstanding against the dark arts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he does some good stuff. I think it's easy to just write Harry off as a
as the everyman main character.
He does some pretty good stuff.
He does.
Snape kills Dumbledore.
Yeah.
As we mentioned.
That's.
And then runs off and then has an awesome crazy-eyed flames in the background shouting at Harry on his way off the school grounds moment, which would probably play really well on film, except I don't think they bothered.
It would. Yeah, it would.
It's such a visual moment to me. I mean, the picture actually at the beginning of that chapter was a really good illustration, I thought.
Yeah.
And we should talk about those illustrations more in our series breakdown, for sure.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are, they're like cute, quickly drawn little pictures, but a lot of them, I think, are pretty useful. All right. So, do you want to explain Harry as Spider-Man?
Oh, okay. Well, at the very end of the book, they have Dumbledore's funeral. It's very upsetting. Fox is singing. And at the end of that, Harry goes up to Ginny and basically tells her that he can't be with her anymore because, Voldemort will use her against him. Which is exactly what Spider-Man does to Mary Jane.
In a graveyard. It's
in a
almost
graveyard.
The same setting. And they're both redheads. The women are.
That's also
That's true. I didn't think about that.
Damn it, Spider-Man.
It's like one of those noble breakups as I have to leave you to save your life
right.
sort of thing.
And Ginny even says, you're doing this for some dumb noble reason.
Yeah,
you?
She does say that. Which is part of what makes Ginny great.
Yeah, I know. I was like, damn it, Harry.
Yeah, so Harry is a Spider-Man.
It all comes down to that.
He does wear less nerdy clothes, though.
Yeah, and that funeral was well-written, actually.
Yeah.
It was very touching.
It was. Just the people who were there and all the non-wizard magical beings kind of paying their little tributes, and you see that he was well-respected by many different elements of the magical community. Even though the ministry people were probably there more as a pro forma than actually caring.
Right.
I liked that Hagrid was there with Grop.
Yeah. When those couple of little moments of people's personalities coming through where Harry almost busts out laughing.
Yeah.
Like when Grop pats Hagrid and sinks the chair partway into the ground.
Yeah.
Or when he sees Luna and Neville hanging out together and has this... His heart, like, has this little surge of warmth because there's those two lonely people
having friends.
Yeah. Okay. Themes?
We've talked about a couple of themes for the series, which I think are in play a little bit in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Love and family loyalty. And bonds and loyalty, all that stuff, yeah. And he got to reprise the, as long as there are people loyal to Dumbledore, he'll always be at Hogwarts at
also
the
from
end.
Book two.
Yep, mm-hmm. Also from book two. Yep, what up? Voldemort's obsession with immortality, but not really knowing how to live life in a way where life is happy, I guess.
Yeah, creating Horcruxes to live forever fucks up your soul, so how is that version of living forever a good thing?
Right, if you make one Horcrux, you live a half-life, so yeah. He's made seven.
Yeah, and I'm a guy who usually comes out as pro-immortality in these stories, and his form of it doesn't
not
sound very good.
Great.
It sounds unpleasant and unfulfilling.
Yeah.
Paranoia and fear, especially from the Ministry, I think, but a little bit from
general,
some other characters.
Like Harry of Malfoy, I mean, even that ends up kind of being right.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and the parents.
People randomly dying and disappearing.
Yeah, and parents of students being worried about them being at school. And actually, one, like, throwaway line that was just really upsetting to me was when Hannah Abbott found out her
Mom.
Mother was killed in the middle of a lesson and
yeah.
has to be escorted out, like. It was a throwaway, practically. That was really upsetting
to
me.
They just saw these two depressed-looking girls, and it's like, oh yeah, their 5-year-old brother got attacked and killed by Fenrir Greyback.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god!
Yeah.
Like, you actually get the atmosphere of bad shit is really happening to people.
Yeah, that it is mentioned kind of casually, I think, even reinforces that more.
Okay.
So we talked about the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah,
strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
I think compared to books 4 and 5, I mean, book 6 is shorter, and it's tighter and better edited.
Yeah.
It calls to mind more the first 3 books than 4 and 5 do, because I think it's paced faster, and more of the stuff that appears in it is really significant.
Yeah, it was better constructed. I really only have one issue with it, and it's, I don't know, it's a medium-sized issue, but since it's only from one incident, when Harry uses the curse on Draco that cuts him open, he immediately felt really guilty and really bad about it, which I thought really fit Harry's character, but then within, like, 24 hours or less, he didn't seem to be that upset by it anymore. He was more indignant that he had to go to all these detentions and
miss the Quidditch.
I have to miss the Quidditch match. It's like, dude, you almost killed a guy. And even though he's a guy you don't like, I don't know, I just felt like Harry's, it would have been more in character for Harry to have like a little mini 2-chapter-long crisis of confidence there or something.
Well, I like the idea of Harry feeling bad about hurting Draco, who's, you know, a person who's always been a total
right.
shit.
Yeah, his nemesis.
Uh-huh.
Right. I mean, it's a sign of Harry's character that he felt bad at all about that, instead of being like, yeah, what, Snape patched him up, who cares?
Yeah, I didn't know that was going to do that.
Because I think that's what Draco's attitude would have been if he'd done that to Harry.
Probably. Too bad they didn't kill him. That's what Draco would have said.
He would have said that, but I don't know if he would have.
Yeah,
would have
actually felt bad. I think my favorite part of the book and greatest strength is all of the memories in the Pensieve they go in and look at about Voldemort's past and building up to the revelation of the Horcruxes. I think that's just some cool ass shit.
Yeah.
It's almost noir, even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kinda.
At times.
We have to find the clues to confirm Dumbledore's suspicions and, as the reader, kind of learn what's going on. So, any questions?
Yeah, is Snape a good guy or a bad guy?
Because Dumbledore trusted him to the very end.
And then he killed him. But
which doesn't seem to quite fit.
He didn't kill Harry, though. And some people at the end of book 6 even consider Snape to be giving him advice, as opposed to just yelling at him.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn to close your mind. You're too obvious. work on that.
I think the first time I read the book, I was actually still wondering if he was a good guy or a bad guy, even though I think we're supposed to turn on him at least a little bit there.
Yeah, I was on the fence, mm-hmm. but I was pretty fucking pissed at
him. Yeah. So, what's our verdict?
I love this book. I think it's actually my favorite of the Harry Potter series. I really like 7 for a lot of reasons, and actually a lot of parallel reasons to this book. You find out a lot more about Dumbledore's past in that book. But in this book, finding out about Voldemort is just fascinating, and I love it. So,
me too.
Ditto!
Yeah, I like this one. It is really well constructed. I'd probably have to agree. I think out of the first 6, it's my favorite one. Because the last 2 were full of information, but this one is equally full of information, but more tightly plotted and put together.
It's like Department of Mysteries plus book 6.
Yeah, if you start at the Department of Mysteries and go all the way to the end of Half-Blood Prince, you have maybe the best chunk of writing in the series.
Kick-ass shit.
Let's see, so no one's... Anyone reading anything right now? We decided no.
What's that? I realized I was reading Maurice.
Yeah, I guess you mentioned that earlier.
Kind of like 5 minutes before I fall asleep.
Yeah. All right.
Well, if you have questions, comments, feedback of any form, and you want to let us know, then you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at novelideaspod.
Ben's been tweeting like crazy.
I was having a good time yesterday.
And you can find us on iTunes.
Yeah, so if you do that, then rate, review, comment, all that good stuff,
et cetera, et cetera.
It supposedly helps us out.
Supposedly.
Next week, we'll be reading Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, which will not quite finish off the Harry Potter extravaganza. We still have to put about 25 people in a room and shout
talk
at each other
for
4 hours. Yeah. But after that, we will, in fact, be done, and we're almost going to make it all in July. We're going to bleed over just a little.
Yeah, I think we might be able to squeeze book 7 into July, but the wrap-up, I don't think is going to make it.
Yeah, I think we did pretty good getting long books read in a single month here, but I think that's all.
Yeah.
All right, good. So that's going to do it, and we'll see you next time.
I'm Harry Potter, singing our song all day long at home.